Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association playoffs continue later Wednesday night in Boston, Massachusetts, where the Boston Celtics will host the defending champion Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. The Celtics eliminated my less-than-magical Washington Wizards Monday night, 115-105, to win that second-round series 4-3. The Cavaliers, meanwhile, have yet to lose in the playoffs, sweeping their first two opponents, the Indiana Pacers and the Toronto Raptors, in 4 consecutive games in each series. The Cavs, led by superstar LeBron James, have also been off since May 7th when they ousted the Raptors, so they should be well rested. The Celtics, meanwhile, got some great news Tuesday night when they won the NBA draft lottery and the right to pick first in the annual NBA draft on June 22nd in Brooklyn, New York. The Celtics capitalized on a trade they made 4 years ago with the NBA club based in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Nets. The Celtics were represented at the NBA draft lottery by their co-owner, Wick Grousbeck.
It's quite a time. Well, great time to be a Celtics fan. This is quite a time, but, you know, thinking back at the time, the Nets were trying to go for a championship then. That's what you have to do when you have a chance. So respect to them for going all in and trying, and now we've had to wait a long time for our turn, and now it's our turn.
Also Tuesday night, it was the turn of the Golden State Warriors to win again. They routed the visiting San Antonio Spurs 136-100. To take a 2-0 lead in the Western Conference Finals. Two-time League Most Valuable Player Stephen Curry led the Warriors with 29 points, 7 rebounds, and 7 assists while playing just 3 quarters. Talk to us, Steph.
You always try to build momentum and sustain it, for sure. We had a point of emphasis of starting the game with a lot more energy and focus on the defensive end, so that we could feel a little bit better about ourselves than we did last game in the first quarter. And then after that, yeah, you just want to continue to build good habits, sustain the level of play. I don't know how much it'll carry over Game 2 to Game 3 going back to their place. But for us mentally, we just know what we need to do to be successful against this team. Even, you know, with Kawhi back in there probably on Saturday, you got to understand exactly the things that we did better tonight. And that's just being a lot more alert defensively to start and just making them work.
We heard Steph Curry say, even with Kawhi back in there, probably on Saturday, he's talking about Kawhi Leonard, San Antonio's all-star forward, who did not play in Game 2 because of an injured left ankle. However, it sounds like Steph is ready to see Kawhi back on the court for Game 3 on Saturday in San Antonio, Texas. The Warriors have been winning without their head coach, Steve Kerr, on the sidelines. The 51-year-old Kerr has been bothered by back problems. However, Golden State's acting coach, Mike Brown, says Kerr gave the team a special message before Game 2.
You got to give our guys credit. I thought in Game 1, you know, Steve did too. We didn't come out with a sense of urgency, and so that was one of the messages that he gave to our team right from Jump Street. He said, we got to come out from the beginning with a sense of urgency. We can't ease into the game, and, you know, you give all of our guys credit. They did not do that. They came out with a sense of urgency from the beginning, and they played that way for 48 minutes. The entire roster contributed. Our bench was fantastic. The bench had 63 points. And then, you know, again, our guys shared the basketball. And we had 39 assists, won 50 shots, which is phenomenal. The one thing we have to keep trying to clean up, and it was another point of emphasis coming into the series, is rebounding the basketball. They had 23 offensive rebounds tonight, and you know, some of it was a product of there were a lot of missed shots, but we can do a better job at cleaning that up going forward. So we know game three is going to be tough.
That's Mike Brown, the acting coach of the Golden State Warriors, expecting a tough game three of the Western Conference Finals on Saturday in San Antonio. Meanwhile, San Antonio's head coach, Greg Popovich, says he expects his club to show a lot more confidence in game three.
I think tonight, it's not what I expected. Disappointed. And the only way I can process is I think it's not about O's and X's or rebounds or turnovers or anything like that. I think we've maybe felt it too much, Kawhi being gone, in the sense that I don't think, as I watched, I don't think they believed. And you have to believe. And I don't think, as a group, they really did, which means probably a little bit feeling sorry for themselves, you know, psychologically, subconsciously, whatever psychobabble word you want to use. But that's the way I process it. I don't think they started the game with the belief. And it showed in the, you know, the lack of edge, intensity, grunt, you know, all that sort of thing. And that was disappointing. But when you're playing a team that's as good as Golden State, you're going to get embarrassed if that's the way you come out. And we did. So I think that's the deal, more than anything. And, you know, game three, I expect to see a different team.
That's Greg Popovich, the head coach of the five-time NBA champion San Antonio Spurs. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, what does the future hold for Liberia? Who will lead the West African nation when President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf leaves office in October at the end of her second term? 2 million Liberians have registered to vote, and nearly half of those are women. What's at stake in Liberia? On the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hi, my name is Florence Mwale, and I work as a reporter at Capital FM here in Malawi. With the world now a global village, the VOA's place cannot be overemphasized, since most of the issues it airs are pertinent to the advancement of least developed countries such as Malawi. All of us here at Capital Radio Malawi are thrilled to be associated with the VOA as a partner station. Some of VOA's programs on our schedule include Straight Talk Africa and Daybreak Africa. As Capital Radio Malawi, we are excited to be associated with the VOA. And now, as the VOA celebrates its 75th anniversary, we look forward to more live radio interactions and strengthened relations. Happy 75th anniversary, Voice of America, from Capital Radio Malawi.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Voice of America.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Moeta, included the recent Anthony Joshua-Vladimir Klitschko bout among his top five world heavyweight title fights of all time. Nnamdi even put it ahead of the legendary Rumble in the Jungle in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where the late Muhammad Ali knocked out George Foreman in the eighth round. Well, I'll take issue with Nnamdi on that one. While Joshua Klitschko was a great fight, I don't think it had the political overtones and the African geographical might of the big fight in the DRC in 1974. In London, Anthony Joshua scored a spectacular 11th round technical knockout victory in front of 90,000 fans at Wembley Stadium. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2017, I look back on Joshua's triumph. Joshua knocked down Klitschko three times, including twice in the 11th round, before the referee stepped in and stopped the fight. The 41-year-old Klitschko, a longtime former world heavyweight champion, says he feels like boxing fans got their money's worth.
I think it was a good fight, and I think that audience, fans, did enjoy it. I wish I would have been a winner of tonight's contest, tonight's fight. AJ did a good job.
In the fifth round, it looked like AJ, Anthony Joshua, might finish the job. He knocked down Klitschko for the first time and threw his arms up. Maybe a bit too early of a celebration, the Ukrainian got up and launched a remarkable comeback. Afterwards, Anthony Joshua paid tribute to Klitschko.
He's been dominant for the last decade and a bit, as well aware of, very dominant, to say. And he took a loss against Tyson Fury. And what I kept on hearing is the obsession and the passion to get the victory. So I always knew I was going to come against the new and improved Klitschko, because sometimes from a loss you do learn from your mistakes and try and come better. So I think that he came to show what he was about, that he still had it. But I knew it was going to be tough for him to kind of show what he was about, because I wanted to do the same. I wanted to go in there and be confident. But maybe against anyone else in the division, he may have come out on top. As I said, I have the ultimate respect for him and what he's achieved inside and outside of the ring. But I wouldn't mind fighting him again if he wants to rematch, no problem. And well done to him, because he took part. He doesn't have to fight. People say he's too old. He doesn't have to fight, but he wants to challenge the young lions of the division. So big respect to Klitschko for that as well, because it takes two to tango.
Anthony Joshua was not the only one praising Vladimir Klitschko for his performance. Associated Press boxing writer Joe DiPaolo wrote, and I quote, "Vladimir Klitschko in defeat proved mightier than he ever had in victory." In the sixth round, Vladimir Klitschko knocked Joshua to the canvas for the first time in his professional career, and it looked like he might reclaim the world heavyweight title belts. Klitschko says at that point, he thought he would beat Joshua.
He managed to get up. Respect. And, well, from that moment, I kind of felt that he's out of gas and concentration, and he recovered, though, three rounds. I think I could have done more to finish him up, maybe, right after when he went down. But I was pretty sure that that's going to be my night, so I took my time.
Vladimir Klitschko says he's also going to take his time regarding his boxing future. We heard Anthony Joshua say earlier regarding Klitschko, if he wants a rematch, no problem. But AJ also called out former champion Tyson Fury after his big win, and unbeaten WBC heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder has also been mentioned as a possible opponent for Joshua, so we'll wait and see. Magnus Chisholm, Ownwood Dewey, the humble apostle of the sunny side of sports, sent me a Facebook message from Owerri, Imo State, Nigeria. Magnus writes, "Big congratulations to Anthony Joshua for beating Vladimir Klitschko in stunning fashion." Magnus says, "I think both fighters lived up to expectations, and I think this should be the biggest achievement for Anthony Joshua in 2017. And Magnus adds, "Big kudos to both guys for keeping it simple and civil in their statements, both before and after this great fight." The major European club football leagues are winding up their seasons. In the Netherlands, Feyenoord celebrated the club's first league title since 1999 in a wet and wonderful collective way. More than a half dozen of the club's players carried their new silverware into a big bathtub and splashed around. Here's what it sounded like. Ready to make a splash here in Studio 22 is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
I can't speak Dutch, but it sure sounded like they were having fun in that bathtub.
Yeah, it sounded like they were having a blast. And you know what? Hearing that and knowing that it's about 32, 33 degrees Celsius outside today in Washington, D.C., I wouldn't mind splashing around in some water today. It might be a little nice outside.
Well, I know you're going to make a splash with your sports social media. What's trending out there, Andrew?
Well, big news from the tennis world. Somebody who is hoping to make a splash in the red clay of Roland Garros, but will not be doing so. And that, of course, is Maria Sharapova. Now, Giddy Nathan of Deadspin.com and I spoke yesterday on the show. We talked about Sharapova maybe trying to take advantage of the fact that Serena Williams will be out for the next few months with her pregnancy. Well, Sharapova finding out from the French Tennis Federation yesterday that she will not receive a spot in the main draw for the French Open, and she will not receive a spot in the qualifying, not a wild card for either of those. So she will not be participating in the French Open. So bad news yesterday for Maria Sharapova on that front. Bad news for her fans who are really hoping that she'd be back at the French Open. Maybe we could make a run there. She's won the French Open twice in the past. They thought this could be her big comeback. And unfortunately, it will not be happening for her. Been a pretty bad week for Maria Sharapova. She gets this news yesterday that she won't be at the French Open. She had to retire against Mirjana Lucic-Baroni at the Italian Open. Sharapova said that she had a left thigh injury, so she had to pull out of that match. And if you look at the past few weeks since she's come back, she's had to play three of her biggest critics, and she's lost to all of them. So she played Eugenie Bouchard at the Madrid Open. She lost to her. And, of course, Eugenie Bouchard said that Sharapova should be banned for life from tennis. She called her a cheater. Then you have Kristin Mladenovic from France. She beat Sharapova at the Stuttgart Open semifinals. That was actually Sharapova's first tournament back. And previously she had said that she didn't think Sharapova deserved her successes because of the doping. And then, of course, Lucic-Baroni. Sharapova was leading in that match but then had to retire. And Lucic-Baroni compared Sharapova to disgraced cyclist Lance Armstrong. So three of her biggest critics, three losses. To Sharapova's credit, she issued a statement on Twitter that said, "If this is what it takes to rise up again, then I'm in it all the way, every day. No words, games, or actions will ever stop me from reaching my own dreams, and I have many." So she, it seems like, is trying to take a positive outlook on this, but certainly a setback for her, setback for her fans, and really a shock. A lot of people, I think, thought at least she would get into the wild card draw for the qualifying, but unfortunately, that is not the case for her.
And on yesterday's show, Andrew, I remember you reporting how Roger Federer is pulling out of the French Open, but Federer was voluntary, Sharapova involuntary.
Right. And actually, what the French Federation of Tennis has said is that because this is not an injury, that was one of the reasons why they did not give her a wild card into the French Open. Also, with that retirement yesterday against Mirjana Lucic-Baroni, Sharapova misses the main draw for Wimbledon, and she'll either need a wild card or will have to go through qualifying. So another piece of bad news for her from that retirement and that left thigh injury yesterday.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, it was bad news for Maria Sharapova and bad news for the Washington Wizards on Monday night, unfortunately losing to the Boston Celtics in that Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. But as we always say, for every team that loses, there's a team that wins, and the Boston Celtics move on. And then last night, a day after moving on to the Eastern Conference finals, they get the first pick in the 2017 NBA draft.
Luck of the Irish.
The luck of the Irish. Now, for those listeners out there who are asking, doesn't the worst team usually get the top pick? Yes, that is true. However, the Brooklyn Nets, who would have had the first pick, traded it away to the Boston Celtics. So the Brooklyn Nets would have had the first pick had they not traded it away. It was about 4 years ago. They made a blockbuster trade, and they traded away some of their picks. Not just this year, in fact. In fact, they chose to trade away next year's first-round pick as well. So Boston could potentially get another first-round pick next year, or first pick next year. Certainly in the first round, they'll have a pick. Boston fans are thrilled. They said it's like another Game 7 all over again, and they're hoping they can complete the trifecta, winning against Cleveland tonight in the first game of the Eastern Conference semifinals. So lots of excitement from the Boston fans. Lots of excitement from Los Angeles Lakers fans. They get the number 2 spot in the draft lottery. A little complicated to go into the details, but by getting the number 2 pick for the third year in a row, the Lakers avoid having to give up a number of other picks in past trades. So their fans are very excited. And then number 3, the Philadelphia 76ers, third pick. They're excited, and especially two fans in particular who got engaged at the draft lottery party in Philadelphia. Pictures and video of that engagement going all over the internet. So congrats to them on the third pick in the draft and their engagement.
Andrew mentioned how the Celtics capitalized on that big trade with the Brooklyn Nets 4 years ago. Well, the NBA draft on June 22nd. Taking place none other than Brooklyn, New York.
So there you go. So
I don't think the Nets are going to
top spot, but oh well.
They won't be too happy to see the Celtics with that number one selection.
I don't think so.
What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, Oklahoma City Thunder star Russell Westbrook is already going to remember 2017 as the year he broke Oscar Robertson's triple-double record, but I suspect that there is another reason he will remember 2017 even more, and that is because yesterday he and his wife Nina welcomed their first child, a baby boy named Noah, weighing at 7 pounds 5 ounces, 20 inches long, has a nice photo up on social media where he's cradling his son in his hand. I love this tweet, though. Angie Treasure, she covers the Utah Jazz, she tweeted, "He was 3 pounds, 5 ounces short of a triple-double baby. Would have given him 20 inches, 10 pounds, 10 ounces." So a little off from the triple-double baby, but still a great addition to the Westbrook family. So congratulations to them.
Congratulations to the Westbrook family. And thank you, Andrew, for that segment.
Thank you, Sonny.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's going to wrap up the May 17th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In the first 100 days of the Trump administration, the United States has embraced its role as a global leader by demonstrating strength and decisiveness on the world stage. On January 28, the president signed an executive memorandum directing the Secretary of Defense to work with other cabinet members to develop a plan to defeat ISIS. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and the U.S. Department of State hosted the 68-member global coalition. In his remarks before coalition partners, Secretary Tillerson reiterated President Trump's position that it is the policy of the United States to demolish and destroy this barbaric terrorist organization. That is what we are going to do. In Syria, the United States mounted a military and diplomatic response 2 days after the Syrian regime's April 4th chemical weapons attack in Idlib province, which killed and injured nearly 100 innocent Syrian civilians. In response, President Trump ordered the launch of 59 Tomahawk cruise missiles aimed at the Shayrat airfield in Homs, from which the assault was launched. The United States has taken a strong stance against continued provocative actions by Iran as it relates to nonproliferation and counterterrorism. On March 21st, the United States imposed sanctions on 30 foreign entities and individuals in 10 countries pursuant to the Iran, North Korea, and Syria Nonproliferation Act. On April 18th, Secretary Tillerson announced a plan to conduct a review of U.S.-Iran policy across the entire government. Iran, said Mr. Tillerson, is the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism and is responsible for intensifying multiple conflicts and undermining U.S. interests in countries such as Syria, Yemen, Iraq, and Lebanon, and continuing to support attacks against Israel. With regard to North Korea, President Trump has laid out a new policy, which aims to pressure North Korea into dismantling its nuclear, ballistic missile, and proliferation programs by tightening economic sanctions and pursuing diplomatic measures with U.S. allies and regional partners. Over these first 100 days, the United States under President Trump has demonstrated strong leadership within the international community and that the United States will continue to take the lead on the global stage.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, what does the future hold for Liberia? Who will lead the West African nation when President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf leaves office in October at the end of her second term? 2 million Liberians have registered to vote, and nearly half of those are women. What's at stake in Liberia? On the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
And AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this, whatever?
Employment rates are climbing. So definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.